Shalom everyone and welcome to another episode of Inside Psalms, where in each episode we delve into one of King David's most beautiful poems and explore some of the mysteries behind its original Hebrew words. And today we're wasting no time in jumping straight into the most famous, most beloved, most quoted psalm of all, Psalm 23. Just make sure to stick to the end where I make a very special announcement. Enjoy. So here we are with Psalm number 23, also known as the Psalm of Confidence, because the main motif here, the main topic, is constantly having confidence in God. We'll start by reading the Psalm, and then we'll go in and explore some of its mysteries. A Psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Okay, so what is going on here? On the face of it, this is one long monologue of David displaying his confidence in God. He's saying that with God, he doesn't need anything else, that with God, he feels like a little sheep being taken care of by its shepherd, that God restores his soul, and so on. But when we go deeper into this Psalm, we see that really what's going on here, and this I learned from a friend of mine, his name is Rabbi Shaul Weingold, we see that the Psalm really divides into two halves reflecting two parts of David's life. So let's look at it this way. So the first thing to understand is that the first two words of the Psalm, Mizmor LeDavid, the Psalm of David, are not really an integral part of the Psalm. Many Psalms open with these words. They're just a description of what's going on here. And then the second thing to notice here is that this psalm really has a heart. The heart of this psalm are the three words, Ki ata imadi, for thou art with me. This is really at the very center of this psalm. It totally encapsulates everything this psalm is talking about. Ki ata imadi, for you are with me, for thou art with me. Wherever I go, whatever I do, I feel that you're in front of me, I place you before me, and I can feel your presence in my life. Now, if we're going along with this idea that these three words are the heart of the psalm, then really what they do is that they split the psalm into two parts, two different psalms in a way. And both of them have to do, they're sort of going around this principle of Ki ata imadi, thou art with me. And so what did they stand for? So we can really see very beautifully that the first half is using the imagery of a shepherd. And this means that it reflects the first half of David's life when he himself was a shepherd. And really what he's saying here is, on the surface, I am the shepherd and I have a sheep, but really I'm looking upwards towards the heaven. And I feel that you are my shepherd. I am really just one of your sheep, just like I am here and now, the shepherd for these sheep, so you are my shepherd. So he says, the Lord is my shepherd. I'm not the shepherd, the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want, just like my sheep. And then the imagery here is all about wanting to be this very, very simple sheep that's walking in the shadow of God in a good way. And he takes care of me. He leads me beside, he makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. It's very spiritual. And I just want to go in the path of righteousness, in the straight path. He makes sure that I don't stray off the path. And of course, I have nothing to fear because someone is looking after me. So this is the first half of the psalm. Now, the second part of the psalm is, when you think about it, quite different. It starts out in a way that you can still imagine we're still in the world of sheep and shepherds, because it says thy rod and thy staff. So we can imagine the rod of the shepherd. But then we're talking about enemies. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of my enemies. So now David is in a state of war. He's fighting enemies. That's not a sheep. That's not a shepherd. That's a warrior. That's something else. And then something else comes into the picture. Thou anointest my head with oil. So what is that all about? That is the image of the anointing of a king. At a certain point in his life, David stops being a shepherd and he becomes a king. And then he has enemies and he has to fight them. So really what's going on here is that the second half of the psalm is talking about King David, not Shepherd David, but King David. This is David in a different place in his life. And then he, and again, what he want? What does he want? He wants to make it clear that he's not really the king, that he has a king over him. And what does he want to do? I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That's what I want. Just like people want to live in the palace. So I do live in the palace. I'm the king. But what is my wish? My wish is to live in the palace of the king. So the wish is the same. When David is shepherd, he wants to be a sheep and God for God to be the shepherd. But now that he's king, he wants to live in the palace, in the house of God. So the imagery is changing. The main message is the same. So now when we look at this, we could think that the two halves reflect, let's say, all of us in our earlier days when we're younger and then later on when we're older. But we can also make it a bit more abstract, more general, then we can go with this in other directions, is that the first half is talking about our weak states, the times in our lives, the states in our lives in which we are weak. We are afraid. We don't have the answers. We're not sure where we're going. Just like a sheep is very weak. And a shepherd also, he's unarmed. And so the first half could reflect the weaker aspects or the weaker moments in our lives. Whereas the second half is talking about us in our more powerful state, when we are stronger, when we have weapons, and then it goes along with having enemies and being in a state of conflict and so on. So we can, again, so that we have two halves. And they're talking about David the shepherd, which we can see as David being connected to his weaker element, the fact that he's helpless and needs help from above. And the second half is him being a warrior, strong, but once again coming back to, again, needing God, needing help in fighting the wars against the enemies. And the heart of everything is, thou art with me, ki ata imadi, meaning that whether I'm weak or whether I'm strong, it doesn't matter. It all revolves around this feeling of needing and wanting to be close and to be in contact, in connection in a relationship with God. Now let's look at something really, really beautiful. If we're looking at these two parts of the psalm, and again, we're putting the first two words aside, and the middle three words, they become the axis of everything, then the most beautiful thing here is that if you look at the Hebrew words and you count them, then you see that they make up exactly the same number of words. Each half of the psalm, not including the first two, and not including the central axis of the three words, they each include 26 words. You can count them, 26 words in each part. Very, very symmetrical. And why is the number 26 so meaningful? It's meaningful because this is the numerical value of the main name of God. It's called the name Havaya, or the Tetragrammaton, the four-letter name that is not to be pronounced. So we simply call it Havaya, which is just switching the letters. If you do the numerical value of the four letters, Yud is 10, and He is 5, and Vav is 6, and another He is another 5, and together it makes up 26. So really what we have here is, it's all God. The first half of the psalm is all about being with God in one state, in the weaker state, and the second half of the psalm is all about being with God in the other state, in the stronger state. So you are with me wherever I go, wherever I'm at, whatever my situation in life is. And there's another verse, very famous in Psalm, that God says, that David says, Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid, wherever I go, I place God before me always. So this is just a beautiful, beautiful reflection of this principle of David's life, of Jewish life, Torah life, of faithful life, that wherever we go, we want to have God, we want to place God and also God's name, his holy name, in front of us. So this is just a beautiful thing to see that the words are divided in such a beautiful symmetrical way. Okay, so what we want to do now is zoom in to the central verse, verse number 4, the verse that contains the words, "For thou art with me," the axis, the central axis of the psalm, and just focus in on this verse, because what's happening here is that this is the place where the axis divides the psalm into two parts, meaning that the first half of this verse itself belongs to the first half, the part of David the shepherd, and the second half of this very same verse belongs to the second half of David as king. So it's all happening really in this one verse. This one verse encapsulates the entire psalm because it contains both the axis and an element of the first part and an element of the second part. So let's just read very closely and see what we can learn just from this single verse. "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me," the axis, "thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." So in the remainder of this video, I want us to glean two life lessons, we can say, from this verse. The first pertaining to the weaker moments of our lives, and the second to the stronger moments of our life. So we're starting with, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death," perhaps one of the most potent and powerful and haunting images in the entire book of Psalm, walking through the valley of the shadow of death. So what is a valley? A valley is the opposite of a mountain. Mountain is when we're high, we're strong, we're powerful, we're all-knowing. Valley is the opposite. Valley is our low moments. Our life is like a wave and it goes up and down. And these are the down moments. We're in the valley. And the deepest valley, the valley that's the most frightening, the lowest point, is that we're not sure if we're going to live or die. And it could be a state of accident or illness, or now our hearts are with the hostages in Gaza, and they're actually literally living in the valley of the shadow of death. And these are the moments that people need God the most. These are the moments that people start believing in God for the first time in their lives. And what they're saying here is something incredible, is, "I shall fear no evil." Why do I fear no evil? Because you are with me. When I'm facing you, then I don't care about the evil people around me, or the evil animals, or the evil forces that are stirring around me. Because there's only one thing I care about. I care about not being evil myself. The only thing worse than being in the hands of someone evil is being yourself the evil one. So this is this awareness, this consciousness, that we did not come into this world in order to, everything be just smooth and wonderful and easy and without any problems, without any worries. That's not the reason we came. We came into this world in order to choose the right thing in whatever situations we were placed in. And this was, we're learning this also from the point of view of the Hasidic tradition. And the founder of Hasidut, Rabbi Israel Baal Shem Tov, he became an orphan at a very early age. When he was 5, his parents passed away. And his father, on his deathbed, told him, "Srolik, little Israel," he told him, "never fear anything. The only thing you have to fear," which is a totally different kind of fear from other things, "is fear of God," which is really the fear of disconnecting from God by choosing badly, choosing wrongly. This is the yirat shamayim, the fear of heaven, or the awe that we are supposed to feel in relation to God. It's not a fear of punishment. It's not a fear of hell or anything of the sort. It's the fear that we will lose this love that we have for God by doing evil deeds. And so this is the source of confidence that King David is teaching us, that even if you're in the valley of the shadow of death and the totally horrible things going on around you, possibly, and you don't know what awaits you, how do you maintain this feeling that you are with me, is that you and God are looking at each other eye to eye, and you're saying, "I know that the only thing you expect of me is to make the right choices, to do the right thing, to do the moral, godly, spiritual thing, not to be as evil as whatever monstrosity is surrounding me, and not to succumb to this darkness and become dark myself. So that's the first thing to learn. Another thing I want to mention here is that there's something linguistically extremely interesting going on here, which is that the two words, shadow and death, in Hebrew it's two words, tzel mavet, or in this case, tzal mavet, they're joined into one word. They merge into one word. It's a very strange word. It doesn't appear anywhere else. It's only here. It's almost like it's a single word that says death shadow, right? Imagine writing death shadow without any spaces. So it's tzal mavet, death shadow. So why is it so weird, so strange? What is it supposed to tell us? So really what we have here is we have a third word hinted at by this merging. When we put tzel, which is shadow, and mavet, which is death, together, tzal mavet, then it's two letters and then three letters. But if we then focus on the first three letters, they become a totally different word. This word is tzelim. Tzelim is one of the Hebrew words for image, and it is the word that's used in the creation of Adam and Eve, that God creates man in his image. Na'aseh Adam b'tzalmeinu kidmuteinu, I shall create man in my image. So this is like taking us in a totally different direction. What's going on here? So we can say in many ways that this entire world is a valley between two forms of understanding the concept of being created in the image of God. Because I said the first three letters are tzelim, but the second two letters, it's one way of making a word into a plural word. So it's almost like I'm walking in the valley of images. But again, the word image is not just any old word. It's a word that goes along with being created in the image of God. So I'm walking in the valley of images. There are like two images, two ways of understanding the concept of being created in the image of God. One of them is very, very positive, that I'm created in the image of God means I have free will, I have a godly soul, and I can choose to let this godly soul shine through me. And this is what I was created for, so I could bring the light of godliness into this dark world. The other side of this valley is taking this concept of being created in the image of God and really not talking about God at all, but talking about the image of man and the stature of man and the importance of man and really becoming God yourself. This is the most negative thing in a way imaginable, because this is the root of all idolatry. All idolatry is people creating gods and goddesses in their own image. Man becomes the creator. And although he's on the surface serving those idols that he created, really subconsciously or under the surface, what he's really saying is, I'm the one everyone should serve because I made those idols and they're made in my image. So really it's a glorification or a deification of the human image. This is the source of idolatry and the source of pushing God out of this world, away from this world, and creating a world that's only material and only human, and man is at the very center of it. So the root of this worldview is that indeed man was created in the image of God. We're not just an animal, but neither are we God. We're between the animals and God. So another totally different interpretation we have here, very deep one, is that this valley of the shadow of death is also the valley of taking the idea of the tzelem, of being created in tzelem Elohim, the image of God, we can take it in two different directions. So, and this in many ways has to do with us in our earlier stages in life, when we're young. It's like a basic decision we have to make. I'm going back to the idea that the first half of the Psalm is a reflection of David's early life. So in our early stages in life, we have to make a very basic decision of basically, who is our God? Is God our God? Are we living, facing this transcendent being that created us and gave meaning to us, which is God? Or do we self-deify and become the ego center of our life? Human beings and us, even if it's not us, even if it's mankind, it's still the divine source is missing. It's gone. So this is the valley of images, which is the valley of life, where which way you're going to go. Now, what about the second half? The second half is talking about David the king, David the powerful, and us in our stronger moments, when we're not weak, when we are in conflict, when we are more mature, and we have to face enemies, and we have to fight them. So what do we do in this? So here we have another beautiful thing, which you will not be able to pick up only by reading the English translation of this psalm. So the verse talks about thy rod and thy staff. So rod and staff, when you read it in English, it sounds like two synonyms. It sounds like just two words for a rod. It could be the shepherd's rod. It could be maybe the king's scepter. But it doesn't sound like two different things. It's like two words saying basically the same thing. In Hebrew, this is totally, totally not the case. The first word, shevet, in Hebrew it's shivtecha o mishantecha, your shevet and your mishenet. So shevet, the first word, that's like a staff that can maybe strike an animal, punish an animal, or punish a human being. That's something that gives off the feeling of authority, of strength, and especially of punishment or bad things that could happen to me. So thy rod would speak of the of you rebuking me. Whenever you send something bad my way, I have to realize it's coming from you. But the second word is totally different. Mishenet is something you lean on. Lehisha'en is to lean on something. That's a very, very positive word. Mishenet is you provide me with something that I can lean on you and I can count on you and I don't have to worry about anything. You're nice to me. You're warm to me. You're like a mother to me. It's a bit like a father and a mother images. Rod, shevet, is a masculine image of that, like this authoritative father, whereas mishenet, it's, by the way, it's an actual feminine noun. In Hebrew, the nouns are gendered. So shevet, the first word, rod, is a male noun, and mishenet is a female noun, and it's very motherly. You provide me, I can lean on you, I can count on you, and you're watching over me just like a little kid who's taking comfort in his mother. So reading what this verse is saying when you read the Hebrew, is it's saying, you send me all kinds of things my way. You send me good things and positive things, and I feel that I'm leaning on you and everything is working wonderfully. And other times, I feel your rod whenever something bad happens, and I'm in a challenge or in a conflict. I feel your rod. I don't feel your mishenet, your staff to lean on. But both of them console me. That's the beautiful, beautiful thing in here. We would think only the mishenet, only the positive staff that I can lean on would be my source of consolation. But no, both console me. Hema yenachamuni, they comfort me, both of them. Because there's comfort, obviously, in being able to lean on you. There's also comfort in knowing that whatever negative thing you send my way is for my ultimate good. It's to better me, and it's to help me grow. And once I realize that all the bad things in life that happen to me are really for my own growth and development and maturity, then I can fully understand that you console me with whatever it is that you send to me. And obviously this part of the verse very much belongs to the more mature half of David's life, the more mature half of our own lives, and the stronger part of us. Because when you're a child, you can only take the straightforward consolation. You need only someone to lean on when you're a child. That's the first part of the psalm, that I'm like a little sheep, and I want you to lay me down in green pastures and take me to waters and lead me wherever, and I don't have to worry about everything. That's the childish half. But in the mature half, now we're dealing with real life and real trouble and real problems. And I need to know that even the bad things and the hard things are truly a source of consolation, because I'm learning and growing through confronting them. So these are the two lessons that we can learn from just looking at the central verse, verse number 4, from this beautiful, beautiful psalm. Of course, we've only scratched the surface, or we barely scratched the surface of the psalm. We have to remember, whatever it is that we're learning in Torah, everything, every psalm, every chapter, every verse is really has infinite wisdom. But I truly hope that we've gleaned something important and productive for our lives today. Now, before we part, it's time for me to tell you that in 6 weeks' time, from March 27th to April 9th, I'll be doing a teaching tour in the U.S. I will be in L.A., Houston, Miami, and New York, in that order. And we'll be launching a brand new book called Becoming One, A Kabbalistic Guide to Finding and Nurturing True Love, which I co-wrote with my Rav, Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsberg. The itinerary is still being set up, and so if you want to book a lecture, a class, or a workshop, this is your chance. You can read the details and find a link to contact me in the description below. That's it for now. What did you think of our reading of Psalm 23? Please leave your comment in the comment section below. I'd love to hear what you think. And if you enjoyed this episode, please hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and I will see you in the next episode. This video was made possible through the kind support of my sponsors over at Patreon. Patreon is a great way to help independent creators like myself produce original content. If you'd like to get more English language videos from me, please consider becoming a supporter via Patreon. You can find the link in the description below. Thank you very much.